BSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number two of the program here on Election Day, 508-996-0500. App chat, open line voicemails in the WBSM app. Let's go right back to the phones. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Hey, Tim. What's going on?
How you doing?
Not bad. Yeah, this is Election Day. Unlike what you said, you wanted everybody to vote tomorrow, but it's election fraud.
No, I said vote today and tomorrow.
That's even worse election fraud. That's, you know, I'm going to tell Barry. And Barry is going to really go in on you this afternoon. You know, when you actually brought that up, I did laugh because you almost can guarantee every one of his fans that listen to him in the afternoon listen to you, but they don't call in as much. And you're 100% correct. They have no problems with whatever he says. They'll be like, oh, that's Barry just being Barry. You know, but that, you know, Tim's just, you know, he's trying to interfere with my ability to go and vote. But a lot of times what I've been thinking about is these were like the Republicans, the diehard Republicans out there. Now, they always complain about the one party system in Massachusetts, but they would have no problem if it was a one party system with Republicans in control. Like if it was a Texas or a Florida or a Georgia, you know, they only have a problem with it being if Democrats in control. Now, if they were actually being honest, they admit that, but they say, oh, we want a split party system. You know, we want the Republicans in control of this part of the government versus that part of the government. The reality is that they just want full control, right? So, my ideal situation with today is if Trump wins, and you know, I supported Trump or I voted for Trump this time around, is if Trump wins, I would want Democrats in control of the Senate. And if Harris wins, I would want Republicans in control of the House. And the reason for that is simple. Harris has big spending aspirations, and the Republicans would actually put a check on her power, on her spending aspirations in the House, and Republican and Democrats would actually put a check on Trump in the Senate in regards to like judicial appointments and stuff like that. Because I truly believe in a split government, because I believe checks and balances with the party ideologies and how they govern is a very good thing. The differences in opinions will allow government to slow down and won't allow a one party system to go through. And in that aspect, that would be my ideal situation. What I think is going to happen is, or what I hope happens, is that Trump does win, because I believe the spirit of America needs Trump in regards to like how it used to be with Reagan. Remember with Reagan, like the spirit of patriotism kind of like really bubbled up to the forefront.
Yeah, but I think that a lot of that is a wave of nostalgia that people feel that isn't entirely accurate when you look back at the history.
Okay.
Because I felt exactly the same way, you know, because I said the same thing, you know, listening to John Cougar Mellencamp and, you know, waving the flag and all that stuff. And then you realize that wasn't, you know, ain't that America for you and me? Well, it wasn't America for a lot of people.
Right. No, I agree that the media actually back in the 80s was pushing patriotism actually a lot more than they are today. You know, you had a lot of the movies coming out were very patriotic and America-centric.
Well, you know, we were Rambo also in the Cold War and had a clearly defined, you know, enemy that once we got into that period of glasnost, a lot of that started to fade away.
Yes. No, I agree. But I don't know. it's just something that I see. But the, like I said in the beginning, the Republicans out there that listen to your show now that just want the single party system broken up. They want a split party. They actually don't. They're lying to your face. And Barry in the afternoon, you know, he would prefer a one party system. And a lot of his fans would be the same way. But my ballot today was a split ballot. I actually voted Deaton for the Senate and Keating in the House. And then Trump obviously for the presidency. So my hope is that it's a split ticket. I think it's going to be. I think the Democrats are going to actually hold on to the House. I mean, hold on to the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to lose the House. The Republicans are going to keep the House, and Trump will win the presidency. That's what I foresee happening. Either way, I hope that if Harris wins, that Republicans still keep control of the House. Just because it'll put a damper on her spending aspirations, and that, and by putting a damper on the spending aspirations, I think we'll put a damper on inflation going forward too.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Hopefully, we'll have an answer for you tomorrow, but probably not.
You know what? Absolutely not. And a lot of the conspiracy theories will start flowing around 10 o'clock tonight.
I believe it.
It's going to be an absolute mess. And we'll probably find out on Friday like we did 4 years ago.
All right. You have a good day.
You got it, Tim. Later.
And 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Oh, hi, Tim. Good morning. Yeah, I have an announcement. the election is tied right now at 3-3 up in Dixville Notch, New Hampshire, which was at midnight last night. 3 for Trump and 3 for Harris.
Well, I mean, you can't get any closer than that, right?
No, you can't. Hey, listen, Tim, I love your spooky South Coast. And I was watching one from 2014, and, you know, about the redheaded hitchhiker.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes all the way down to Texas on Route 44.
So, yeah, there's other, like, similar road phantoms that are seen on various different roads. In fact, there's people who have seen a redheaded hitchhiker on Route 6 here on the South Coast. But the idea is that, you know, this is kind of a trope that happens in a lot of different places. But what if it's not a trope? What if it is kind of the same phantom that's going from one of these locations to another? So it's entirely possible. We had always wanted to do an episode where, you know, we were here and our friend Clarissa was in Texas and we could both kind of, you know, be there for where the hitchhiker is said to be seen in both those places and see what happens. But we just never were able to pull it off.
Sure. If I remembered right, is he also wearing like a lumberjack jacket, like a red and black checker jacket?
Yeah, he's seen in like dirty boots, dirty jeans, a red flannel shirt. He's got bushy red hair and a big bushy red beard.
Oh, wow. Hey, and another thing I got out of that. In Bridgewater, are there caves out there off of Forest Street?
There are some caves. Yeah, there's caves in Bridgewater. There's some caves in Middleborough. That they think that these were kind of places where the natives would store things and maybe where they might have hid from the colonists. So there are caves that exist out there, yes.
Have you seen them?
I haven't seen them.
You have not?
No. Some of them are on private property, so I'm not going on somebody's property without their permission.
My father owned property right behind the new teacher in the high school, mm-hmm. up the Summit Street. And when he was a boy, his parents owned the property up there. And there was an Indian cave over there, but the city buried it. He used to go down and play in there years ago.
Yeah, there were a lot more caves around that did get either, you know, dismantled or you know, kind of plowed over as a way to keep people out of them.
Yeah, they filled that in. But, yeah.
Imagine the artifacts that are just sitting in there now.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you another time. Thank
all right.
You.
Have a great day.
Yep.
And there's probably so many artifacts just sitting in those caves that we'll never get to now. So I had mentioned that we're going to learn about an organization here on the South Coast that can help people that are in need that you might not have been aware of as one of the places in which to turn. And it's part of our South Coast Health Community Spotlight, where South Coast Health is shining the spotlight on some local organizations that are doing great things. And we are joined now by Liz Wiley, the Executive Director of the Marion Institute. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. So I've heard a lot about the Marion Institute in the past and seen some of the different programs that they offer there. But tell us what the mission is of the Marion Institute.
Yeah, the mission is really to promote health equity to all, right? So we engage individuals and community in root cause solutions for health equity and environmental and social justice. So we do that through our four programs that we have. I would say three of them are very community focused and focused on nutritional security. We run the South Coast Food Policy Council, which is a program that connects and brings together food system stakeholders. And we work towards solutions and policy solutions to build a regional food system that is equitable to everyone. We have a farm called Frogfoot Farm on the Wareham Plymouth line that is a farm to food relief program. And that program really got incubated and came out of the work of the Food Policy Council. In 2021, we conducted a food system assessment of Southeastern Mass. And some of the priorities that came out of that were that we had not enough access to local food in the food relief programs. We actually conducted a survey and reached over 500 food insecure individuals that reported that the hardest food items for them to access were fresh fruits and vegetables, meat, dairy, and seafood, which, as we know, is the basis of any healthy diet. Mm-hmm. So the fact that that's what's missing from the food relief program was a big red flag to us and a priority for us to look at solutions to fix that. And another priority that came out of that report was that in Southeastern Mass, we do not have a gleaning, like a active gleaning program. And that term gleaning means that it's when volunteers are trained to become certified gleaners and go and harvest crops on farms that would otherwise go to waste. So maybe a farmer has a crop that they're not going to be able to harvest because they don't have the labor to harvest it, or they don't have a market to sell it to, and it would just go to waste in the field and be turned back in. And so having a gleaning program will allow us to work with farmers to access those crops and bring that food into the food relief program. But then circling back to the food policy work, right, it's important for us to look at policies and advocate for policies that provide tax incentives to farmers that donate food, right? They shouldn't just have to donate that food without receiving some sort of tax benefit or a financial benefit. So our work is interrelates in that way with one another. So we run Frogfoot Farm, Neighbors Feeding Neighbors. At that site, we will be harvesting food that will go to food relief, but we'll also be training gleaners that will be able to go to other farms in the region. And then we run a grow education program, which is a program focused on farm to school. We work with elementary schools across the South Coast. We're in all of the elementary schools in New Bedford, and in Westport, Wareham, and Sipican Elementary School in Marion. So we have four different districts, school districts that we're working with, and 23 different individual schools. We build gardens at these schools so that we're basically bringing a microcosm of a farm to these schools so that kids can learn about where their food comes from and learn about nutrition and agriculture and the importance of local agriculture. And then those lessons in the garden are reinforced in the classroom and in the cafeterias. And then we run our worksite wellness programs. So we do a lot with wellness programs in, businesses. You know, if you have a business and you want to do a wellness program, and, we have a health restart program and a stress reset program that we can do with businesses around the South Coast as well.
So with all of that work being done to combat food insecurity, you have to look, you look at a country like ours and you say, how is it possible that somebody can live every day not knowing where their next meal is? But that's not just the definition of food insecurity. As you were describing, sometimes it's not having access to the right foods as well.
That's right. And, right now, as we're seeing after the pandemic, right, we saw a lot of food insecurity during the pandemic, and it's continued to, those rates of insecurity have increased since the pandemic. And that's because there's just, sometimes food insecurity is about weighing, okay, so I have a certain amount of money every month. What am I going to use that money for? Is it going to be to pay my health bills? Is it going to pay my rent or my utilities? And sometimes food becomes, you know, the bottom of that list of what gets paid and what gets paid first. I think that it's such a hidden epidemic amongst us, right? 1 in 3 individuals is food insecure. That means technically they don't know where their next meal is coming from, or they are skipping meals, or that's kids that are reliant on school, you know, meal programs, and not eating from Friday to Monday if they don't have, you know, a backpack program at their school. So it can look, you know, it's parents skipping meals so their kids can eat. It doesn't look like, I think, what we traditionally think of as food insecurity, you know, 30 years ago. It looks very different today. So there's that. And then you're right. There's also, you know, there's a shortage of, I don't want to, you know, I think that the Greater Boston Food Bank does a wonderful job of trying to provide food to food pantries. That's for sure. But again, those, you know, a lot of the food ends up being that shelf stable food, right? And that's right. Not just because of what they're sending. It's also on the end of, you know, the receiving end of food pantries, not having the enough refrigeration, a cold storage space to be able to actually have fresh vegetables and fresh meats and things like that. So it's sort of a problem twofold, right? Where it's a infrastructure problem, and we have to look at it from a capacity building and infrastructure building view. And then we also have to look at, you know, the inputs of how can we get more healthy, fresh local foods into these food relief programs.
Yeah, because you see sometimes people go to these food pantries, they're coming back with like Pop-Tarts and ramen noodles, and that you would think that the idea would be that you'd be getting something that would be a healthier option. And part of that too, I think, you know, you're talking about the supply, but I think part of it too is education of food, that people need to realize what it is that they need to survive, so that when they do have a limited budget or limited resources, they can get the right things.
That's true too. Yep, absolutely. And also being aware of what people have to cook with, right? Like, I think that, you know, you don't want to say, oh, you're picking choices that are, you know, shelf stable, or that you can, you know, heat up in a microwave, that are processed foods and things like that, because sometimes that's all people have, mm-hmm. right? So if we know that people don't have working kitchens, or that they're reliant on making all of their meals on a hot plate or a microwave, then we have to change that narrative, right? We have to change that system and be able to say, then let's get prepared foods that are, you know, fresh, healthy prepared foods into food relief programs that can be heated up on a stovetop or a microwave. You know, that it's changing how we do things when you see these problems. And I think that, you know, that's kind of how we're looking at it, is thinking more about how do we work towards nutritional security instead of food insecurity.
And so what are some of the challenges that you're still facing then, in addition, you know, with all the work that you're doing, what are some of the things that you still need to overcome?
Well, I've tried to hit upon a couple of them, but thank you, because I think it's important to highlight them, right? I think that the infrastructure for a regional food system is something that is, you know, important for us to work on, because it's like you can have all these best ideas, but if you don't have the infrastructure to support those ideas, it's not going to work. So thinking more about our transportation routes, thinking more about our supply chains, and making sure that there's enough cold storage and refrigeration for us to, you know, bring more of those local food, fresh food items to a region. You know, we have aggregators. We have, you know, we're really lucky in New Bedford. We have Coastal Food Shed that is a local food aggregator. But how do we support that? How do we bolster that and build that up? And then what are the other components? Like, we might need food processors and distributors, and you know, there's all the components that we have to fill in to build that infrastructure. So that's first and foremost. And then I think we need policy to support some of these changes, right? Like, we need to advocate for tax incentives for farmers when they donate food. We have to advocate for bills that allow us to distribute prepared foods in food pantries. And right now that's not the case, you know, so supporting some of that, just like supporting some of the policies to support food literacy and getting people to understand why it's important to buy local and support your local farmers and producers and economy.
So if people need the services that you've been speaking about, how can they reach out? How can they get involved with getting this help?
Well, there's lots of ways, but I'll speak just from the Marian Institute's point of view is we would love more people to join and get involved in our work with the Food Policy Council. So becoming a member at large, following us on you know, our action alerts and legislation updates that we're providing is really important. So you can just go to the Marian Institute and go to our South Coast Food Policy Council program and sign up to be a member at large. Certainly at Frogfoot Farm, Neighbors Feeding Neighbors, and this regional gleaning program that we're about to launch, we need volunteers. So if you are, you know, interested in getting your hands dirty and getting out there on the farm, we would love to have you sign up and be a volunteer. You can do that through our Frogfoot Farm program. Just reaching out and following what we're doing at the Marian Institute is probably the best way. Just signing up for our monthly newsletter and following the work and getting involved where you feel most comfortable.
See, I think we've got lots of listeners who always wanted to be a farmer but didn't want to have to get up at 4 a.m.
We've got plenty of opportunities for you. I'm leaving here today, and then I'll be headed to Frogfoot Farm where we are harvesting our first crop of radishes and turnips and then driving them over to Damien's Food Pantry in Wareham, and we'll be giving our first crop over. So this is an exciting day.
Radishes are delicious. Very underrated in the vegetable world.
So are turnips, I just have to say.
Yes, absolutely. So, and again, how can everybody find all the Marian Institute's information?
Go to marianinstitute.org, and you'll find all the information that you need there. We have lots of program. Follow us on our social media channels, our Instagram and Facebook channels. We've always got great content.
Liz, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And now we've got to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with the news. Stay tuned. And now it is time to go into the newsroom and get all the top stories of the day from Phil Devitt.
Eyes on security as voters head to the polls. Sean Diddy Combs wants to silence witnesses. And daylight saving time isn't just messing up humans.
From the WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
It's election day, and the head of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency is confident it'll be secure, Brian Shook reports.
Jen Easterly, who heads CISA, said in a press call Monday, the election community has never been better prepared to deliver safe, secure, free, and fair elections. Her remarks come after several issues, including attempts to destroy several ballot drop-off boxes and at least one low-level hacking attempt. She said the agency has observed what she called small-scale incidents that have resulted in no significant impact to election infrastructure. I'm Brian Shook.
A Monmouth University poll showing that a majority of voters trust the electoral count. Lisa G with details on that.
Susan Lerner, executive director of the nonpartisan watchdog Common Cause New York, says New Yorkers should remember human beings are administering elections, and if there are human errors, the process is set up to detect them.
Our election administrators are expected to follow the law, and if they follow the law, things will come out okay.
According to the university poll conducted in mid-October, 66% of voters are at least somewhat confident in a fair and accurate election. Lisa G., NBC News Radio, New York.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. telling his supporters not to vote for him. Lisa Taylor with the details.
In a final note to voters, on the day before the election, the ex-independent candidate has been campaigning for former President Trump. Kennedy said in a video posted on X, "Let's get President Trump back in the White House and me to Washington. He'll appear on the ballot in Michigan and in Wisconsin." I'm Lisa Taylor.
A couple of days after his death, famed songwriter, record producer, and performer Quincy Jones is being remembered for his contributions to entertainment. The 28-time Grammy winner passed away Sunday at his home in Bel Air, California at 91. He was widely considered to be one of the most influential jazz artists of the 20th century and produced for many other artists, most notably Michael Jackson, including a collaboration with Michael and Lionel Richie on the 1985 charity single We Are the World. A gag order to stop potential witness statements outside of court is being requested by Sean Diddy Combs' lawyers. The music and business mogul's legal team filed documents Sunday, citing grand jury witness Courtney Burgess in particular, who's given multiple interviews recently. Multiple news outlets report Burgess's attorney said he's testifying because he's seen lewd videos of Diddy and his friends. And for your pets, standard time isn't feeling so standard. Lucinda Kay explains.
Anytime you're a creature of habit, changes to routine can rattle your well-being, and that includes dogs. Veterinarians say dogs are extra sensitive to our two time changes. Their rhythm is synced to sunrise and sunset, and so standard time isn't so standard yet. Bedtime, mealtime, and walk time are all at different times. Your pup might show signs of anxiety like pacing, whining, or being more clingy than usual. Try to introduce the time change gradually, which means you may have to rise earlier than normal, and offer your pets some extra TLC. I'm Lucinda Kay.
WBSM Sports.
Celtics beat the Atlanta Hawks 123-93. Next up, Golden State Warriors visit TD Garden on Wednesday. Boston Bruins welcome the Calgary Flames the next night, and the Patriots head to Chicago to play the Bears on Sunday.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
We're looking at a warm election day. Temperatures around 70 degrees at the peak. Clouds and sun and breezy. Wednesday, even warmer. Temperatures in the mid-70s. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM.
Welcome back in. 508-996-0500. App chat. Open line voicemails on the WBSM app. Last night, I heard that as I was watching the final Kamala Harris speech of the campaign, Doug Emhoff came out to that song. And I was like, that's kind of a interesting choice of a song because it's, you know, about kind of smashing the establishment, but and I, you know, as the incumbent vice president, Kamala Harris kind of is the establishment. But I just thought it was an interesting choice. It's a great song. I love the song. The if you're going to make one album and really just have like one hit, and then walk away from being a performer, that's the one to have. So the other part of this election day, and we talked about it earlier and you heard Phil mention it there in the news, is, you know, beautiful day, beautiful warmth, and that's one of the contributing factors to why Secretary of State Bill Galvin thinks that the final turnout today will exceed the record-setting 3.7 million voters who participated in 2020. Turnout as of last night was 33.6% of the state's total registered voters for early voting. And for mail-in voting, with 82% of the ballots requested for vote by mail already returned. So I think people are getting used to these other ways to vote, and they're utilizing them. So we'll see what happens today. Like, what is the mood going to be out there? Will it be less people, or will it be even more people? And this is just going to be a day that blows every other election out of the water. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're on WBSM.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. A little tired. Got in late. I was in Plymouth yesterday. Duxbury, Plymouth. Been back here and whatnot. So I'm a little tired. So excuse me if I sound, you know, tired. So I wanted to ask you, what was the temperature 4 years ago?
I don't know.
I mean in 2020, right? You said 2020?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I don't, I'm trying to think back to what that day was like.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of recollection of it. I know I voted early last year too. Last time too in 2020.
That's funny. But yeah, I can't believe this weather. It's amazing. It's just amazing. Yesterday morning it was kind of chilly, right?
Yeah, it was still in the 40s yesterday morning when I left.
Yeah, I saw frost on the ground where I'm at. But yeah, so like this is it's just great. I'll take it any kind of way. So I wanted to ask you just real quick about this one thing. So the Marion Institute, did she say the name of the farm was Frog Farm?
Yeah, let me look it up because it's something similar to that. Yeah. Give me 1 second. It is Frogfoot Farm.
Frogfoot Farm. That is so funny because my other nickname, I swear to you, is Froggetti. Because I love frogs, right? And I'm like, did she say that? Not that I expect that there's going to be frogs, people, you know, eating frogs. But I just thought that was a riot because they just make me laugh. And I got all these little stuff people gave me. I told everybody, stop. I don't want any more. Thank God I'm not, you know. Laura bought me something really special that it's so me. She's holding a martini. And she's on a lounge chair with her sunglasses up. I love that. That's right on my coffee table. But I said, wow, this is meant for me. I was so into her conversation anyways. And I'm like, wow, I want to get behind this. And then when she said Frog Farm, I'm like, oh, that's it. That's my omen. I've got to, you know, but I'm not getting up and going to no farm at 4 a.m.
I think you can volunteer at different times.
Yes, of course. Yeah, so I'm kind of excited about that. And I like the fact that they're trying to push the fresh food, non-preservative can, you know, like whatnot. I'm very excited about that. And that got me to thinking about the United Way.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're doing the food drive and all that. I'll do what I did last year. I'll just bring all my bags straight to them. But I wanted to ask you, do we know who the family's going to be for Christmas yet? Or
I haven't been given that information yet.
Yeah, not yet. Okay. And now I feel kind of selfish, but I am really hankering for some hand-cut homemade French fries. I haven't had them in over a year. And last time, it was very disappointing. And I'm like ready to even have a cheeseburger, big fat cheeseburger. And I want to know, Tim, where can I go and get that? I'm getting it tomorrow.
There's a lot of great places where you can go to get that, but one place you can try, there's a couple of places if you want to go downtown. You have Sixes and Sevens, where you heard Jordan on with me Friday talking about the fundraiser for Brent Berkeley's family. He's also the co-owner of Sixes and Sevens. They have smash burgers there that are very good. And you can also go right across from City Hall. There's Smashed, which is a new place that's opened up that has smash burgers. They're very good there as well. So those are just a couple of places, but there's a lot of great choices for burgers around here.
Yeah, but the fries, hand cut fries.
I don't know if they hand cut them there, but I know that they have fries that's smashed.
Okay, well maybe somebody out there will know because that's.
I think they have fries at Sixes and Sevens too. I think I had fries the last time I went. I know I've had chips there too, but I think I had fries last time I was there. I don't usually eat.
How was your weekend?
I don't eat the potatoes, so it was quiet. I just. Did a little thrifting and did a little work and tried to avoid people.
Good. So you really did rest up.
Yeah. I slept like 8 hours on Saturday and I think another, or like 10 hours on Saturday and like 8 hours on Sunday.
Oh, good for you.
And now I'm exhausted.
And just think, you got a whole week ahead of you.
Yep. Well, I knew I was going to be staying up late tonight because I got to keep an eye on some of the local elections, which we should have a winner of by the end of the night. And I was very like, well, exciting. I got to go to bed early. And then I ended up staying up until 12:30 last night. So
Okay, well, I think we both went to sleep at the same time. Yep. So, yeah, I'm very excited. I just can't wait. And it's going to be a long, drawn-out process, and that's the hardest part, right? Because we're so excited about this particular election. It's, like you say, history is being made.
Well, Ian Avery wants me to mention that Surfside has hand-cut fries and smash burgers. They'll be reopening next weekend for weekends only, starting on Friday nights.
Oh.
So there you go. You can get both. You can get both in one shot.
Yeah, haven't even been there yet, as much as I've heard about it. Wow.
Yeah, great food over there.
Yeah, well, I'll make my way. But, you know, french fries and hamburgers, that's a once-a-year deal. I eat hamburger meat in my spaghetti sauces and things of that nature, but...
I can tell you, a seafood platter is a once-a-year deal for me now, because, one, they're expensive for the most part, and two, I can't eat all that food anymore, but I had one at Surfside on Columbus Day that was fantastic, so...
Surfside, huh? Yeah, that's a once-a-deal kind of thing for me, too. I love scallops, broiled.
Yeah, I'll have scallops a couple times a year, but I just the big fried seafood plate, especially now because I don't, you know, I just pick a little bit here and then I got to reheat it the next day, and it's not never as good reheated.
Yeah, well, for me, my it's hereditary high cholesterol, so if I can keep my cholesterol numbers at 220, I'm doing good. So, and I've never been a huge fried food eater, which kills me. Like, why is my, you know, why do I have to have this?
Well, it's election day, so you treat yourself.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow I'm definitely going out and getting all that stuff. I have an appointment today, but I don't want, I want to eat it tomorrow when I can just bring it home and just chow down.
Right,
maybe I'll eat in the restaurant. I've never been to Sixes or Sevens either. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's very, very good. I go there for lunch sometimes with Kristen, who works here, and I get dinner there sometimes. We're very good. I like the boneless tenders.
Okay. Gonna get. Have me. Oh,
but you can't go wrong at any restaurant around here. So, all right.
No, really, we are blessed to have so many quality, high quality restaurants. And for the most part, they are reasonably priced. I mean, we've got it made down here for food.
Yeah, we're doing all right. I got to hold you there because I got to go to a break here. You have a great day, and hopefully, you get that burger and fries tomorrow.
Yeah, and thanks for having the Marion Institute on. That was very informative. I'm going to definitely somehow get dirty.
Thanks, South Coast Health. They're the ones that make it all possible with a community spotlight.
Okay, kids. I'll talk to you later.
Have a good day.
Yep.
And I got to take a break, but we'll take more of your calls. 508-996-0500. Be right back. Welcome back in, 508-996-0500. And we got an app chat message from the one and only Johnny OneNote, which I just clicked out of the app chat. Hold on. I just went to go click into that tab and I hit the X instead. By the way, I just want to point out that, and this is in no way an endorsement of a candidate, because I don't do that, but Christopher Thrasher got it right because he changed it up and had Election Day specific ads. If you are running for office, that's the strategy that you need to do. You need to have your ads that run until Election Day, and then you have to have Election Day specific ads. And we make sure, you know, you want one that runs just on Election Day. That's what we do. But it always makes a difference. When I hear a candidate say, you know, today I tune in. Like my ear zeroes in on a little bit more. So as I mentioned, we got an app chat message from Johnny OneNote, who says, I cannot understand why America would want to go backwards and vote for Trump. We have been there and done that. He left us a $21 trillion debt, riots in the streets and at our capital, high unemployment and a stock market with numbers half of what they are now. I just don't know why America would go backwards. And that, again, comes from Johnny OneNote, sending in the app chat message on the WBSM app from the OneNote Ranch. You heard a few moments ago, Sketty mentioned the upcoming Hunger Heroes food drop, And, of course, as we are getting ready for Thanksgiving, we want to help the United Way of Greater New Bedford supply local families, 1,000 local families, with a Thanksgiving basket. So for the 32nd year, we'll be collecting food to benefit the Hunger Heroes Project. Join us at Aldi in Dartmouth Saturday, November 16th from 10 to noon to donate the necessary Thanksgiving items. You can find all the details at WBSM.com of what you can donate. And again, you don't even have to get out of your car. You just pull up to us at Aldi. We'll take it out of the car. We'll do all the work. If you don't have anything there to donate, Aldi will have it all on display right next to the register, so you can just grab something from the list and bring it out to us. The Hunger Heroes Food Drop is made possible by our friends at Ishwartz Appliance, First Citizens Federal Credit Union, Carefree Homes, and Aaron Pools and Spa. Got to take one final break here before the end of the hour. We'll be right back. All right, that is going to do it for this hour. Stay tuned.